Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Oleg Kujakov, the founding partner of Angelnears. Good afternoon, Oleg. How you doing?
Good afternoon. Very good. Very good. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us today. I know it's close to the weekend for both of us, so hopefully you have a good weekend. I know it's a sunny day in the San Francisco Bay Area, finally. We've had a lot of rain lately. It's good to see the sun again, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's so, all good.
Yes. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Sure, I'll be happy to. So I'm originally from Russia, was born and grew up in St. Petersburg. Wanted to be a hockey player when I was growing up. Unfortunately, I did not make a team. So I went to study architecture. And these were the days when architects were transitioning from manual design into computers. And that's how I ended up in computers. Spent actually worked for a couple of years in Paris in one architectural firm, and then moved to the United States in the mid 90s. Got into business school and did my time as, tried to be an investment banker like everybody else, and then did not particularly like that. And then eventually, just by accident, ended up at Intel Capital in the summer of 99 as a corporate VC. So that's what I've been doing since, and basically been doing that for 20 some years, being in global tech industry and mostly focusing on enterprise and B2B companies and served on board of some companies. I also been corporate executive, doing corporate development. And then today I still continue to invest and work and mentor and advise such as startups. And then about a year ago with several partners, we co-founded Angelnears, which is a seed stage mission-driven firm. And I think we aspire to redesign what is known as traditional venture capital model and try to bring a bit of a different mindset and a bit of a different company building support and sort of a different capital as well in order to align more with entrepreneurs. So during this year, past year, we handpicked this exceptional team of highly experienced people, operators and technologists, and who collectively invest not only their money, but also the significant time and effort to help entrepreneurs to build this category defining companies. Wow. And among other things, we also produce the Angelnears podcast, where the founders and operators, they share their firsthand knowledge of how to build and scale startups. So that's in a nutshell, a quick summary about what I'm doing and what my firm is doing.
Very good. Well, before we get into more detail on that, I have to tell you, we have something in common. I too wanted to be a professional hockey player, but I couldn't take a hit from those big guys. I could skate, but I couldn't take that hit. They hit hard, right?
Yeah. Yes, they do. Yes, they do indeed.
So coming from Russia, I would assume you're a Sergei Makarov fan, correct?
One of those, or Nikolai Larionov. Actually, back in the day on Detroit Red Wings, we had, all five players in the field would be Russian-speaking fellas back in the mid-90s.
I have seen that documentary. So we could talk about that for hours, but why don't we get back to the topic?
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think makes Angelnears different than the typical venture capital corporation? And tell us, what the name means, actually.
Mm-hmm. So let me start from the latter. So the name means it's a combination of angels plus engineers, because we have the core team as very heavy technical people, operators. So that most of them are engineers by training, and they invest as angel investors. So they invest their own capital. That's why, hence the name Angelnears. And what we do is that we actually flip the traditional venture capital model upside down, or maybe 180 degrees, whichever way you prefer. So instead of working and investing with lots of companies and spending very short, brief time with each of them individually, we actually work with, invest, and operationally help to fewer number of companies. But by definition, that allows us to spend way more time with each company and add more value. And we hope that that really helps the companies to get on this trajectory of success and mitigates the risks, right? So we're basically putting our own skin in the game, and that creates this alignment of entrepreneurs. And actually, we did not try with this model, we did not try to reinvent the bicycle. We just pretty much looked at you know, what was the heart and soul of venture capital back in the early 70s of the last century when Klein and Perkins kind of wrote this playbook, right? So they invested in a few companies and were really rolling up their sleeves and really helping them. And they were very successful during this time.
Very interesting. So you're doing the more, what would I say, the more directed approach, as opposed to a lot of venture capitalists do the shotgun approach. Give a bunch of companies money and hope one of them hits, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe just to spend the 2 seconds, because it's a dear topic, something that I thought a lot about is that I think in the last maybe 20, 30 years, you know, this concept of diversification, and which originated in the public capital markets, right? Where you're a passive investor and you should diversify your holdings. So the more positions you have in your portfolio, the better you're likely to do, right? Mm-hmm. But again, this is the kind of mental framework of a passive investor, where you do not really have any impact on the destiny of your investments. And this kind of model and this thinking trickled down into a venture capital industry as well. And so today we see that lots of many investors, they like to invest in more than 30, maybe even 50 companies per their fund. And when you have that many portfolio companies, by definition, you have only 24 hours per day. So you can spend only that much time with each of your company. And so at best, and I know this from the firsthand experience, then, okay, maybe you'll meet the founder of a particular company for an hour once a month. You don't really know what's going on. You don't really have a context of what's happening. And by definition, the help, the advice you can provide is very superficial, very high level, right? So with that in mind, I wanted to start something that a firm that would be really working differently and would be really helping significantly, and again, as bringing on these operators who would really, you know, just take the workload off the plate of founders as opposed to just telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. And we believe that this approach could really improve the odds of success of each individual startup.
Oh, I would agree. And so out of curiosity now, I would assume the way you do business, you really want to get to know the founders pretty well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The way we work, we actually start with what we call a dating period, where we engage into a number of conversations with founders. And so we learn about them, they learn about us. And once after a period of time, we see what there is a fit, then we would engage. Because again, I repeat, we work maybe with maybe 10, 12, maybe up to maybe 15 companies per fund, right, at the time. But this allows us to spend, to dedicate more time to each founder, to each company individually.
Interesting. So now that we're all on lockdown and since COVID, has that made it more difficult for you to really get to know the founders and make investment decisions?
Yes and no, right? Because of course you would, this is a relationship business, right? And so you definitely want to have to spend a significant kind of face-to-face, right? Significant time as seeing each other, like face-to-face, right? Because this way, learn better about each other. You can see the body language and just more, becomes a more intimate sort of relationship. And of course, when COVID happened, so we had to go completely remote. There is a downside, but then again, just, from my personal experience, I've been working remotely with my colleagues probably during the last 15 years, just because I had to travel a lot between Silicon Valley and Eastern Europe. So I was always, you know, we used Skype back in the day.
Right.
And there was, if you remember, there was WebEx of Cisco, right? And then RingCentral.
GoToMeeting.
GoToMeeting, right? All this. So Zoom, it's not like a unique company. And yeah. I think actually I heard that in the early days of Zoom, they actually used a white label technology from RingCentral. Probably rebuilt it by now, but that's what it was. And so it's not completely new. And also I would say that many startups that I worked with in the past, many of them had employed remote teams, right? Maybe that this were the startups, let's say they would have maybe a CEO or maybe a couple of senior executive based in the Silicon Valley, but they would also have engineers based, you know, typically in Eastern Europe, in my particular case, or maybe some other place. Some startups would have, you know, employees based in India or China or you name it, other countries in Europe. So that's not a completely new model for us, and actually something we're quite used to. But I think that COVID just made it, you know, 100% remote.
Yeah, it did. It affected everybody. So did it have a big effect on some of the companies that you already had funded that all of a sudden everything was remote? And how did you deal through with that?
I'd say that, again, yes and no. I think tech companies, they adapted to this new reality better maybe than average business, just because at the end of the day, you know, if you have a good internet connection and laptop, that's, if you're like a techie, an engineer, that's pretty much all you need, right? And so you can work from any other place, and as long as you have connection.
Right.
It might be, of course, it takes maybe toll on, you know, your mental health. Like if you're sitting all alone in kind of small apartment in San Francisco, maybe to do that for, you know, maybe for a week, that's okay. But if you've been doing that for a year, that's tough, right? Tough. If you don't see your peers who you used to, and that's tough. Like, of course, from the communication perspective, that's tough too, right? Because everybody maybe got by now the, what is known as Zoom fatigue. But again, on the business side, what we've seen is, you know, our portfolio companies are kind of cope with this quite well. On the, maybe some of their clients who they're tackling, maybe they demonstrated some, those in the real life and analog type of businesses, they got hit. But tech companies per se, I think they fared this pandemic maybe better than average. So that's been our kind of my observation.
Yeah, actually, some tech companies actually have thrived and actually done better. Zoom's the best example, but there's
particularly another company that we actually worked with in the past called Miro, which is providing a collaboration environment, right? A collaboration platform. So yeah, this pandemic created a huge kind of a tailwind for them, right? Because they got experienced significant growth in terms of their adoption, but because everybody needed some modern solution to collaborate remotely. So that's exactly, it was a good, circumstance for these particular guys.
Yeah.
So not for everybody, but for them. Yeah.
True. So since you've been in tech for many years now, what do you think is the future of remote employment, and what do you think can be done differently to make it more effective?
I think remote is here to stay, right? And it was sort of a trend. I think that COVID pandemic just accelerated this trend and accelerated the adoption. So even when it passes, right? Like every pandemic passes, as the historical experience shows us, including that of bubonic plagues and whatnot, and Black Death or Spanish flu. So I think it's going to stay. It might, you know, get into some maybe hybrid model where I don't believe that 100% of the office employees would return back to their offices. I think some people would be able to make a case to their employers that, hey, you know, I spent like 12, 18 months locked down at home working, and my productivity actually improved. And so let me continue carry on that way. And if you look at even several companies, I think maybe the likes of Twitter and maybe Twilio, one of those, they allowed, they basically said, hey, you can, if you're an employee and you're doing fine, you can stay working from home indefinitely.
Right.
So you don't have to come back. Some companies like Google, I heard that they actually want some people to come back, but we'll see, right? So I think remote will stay. And it might be some sort of a hybrid model. In terms of challenges and roadblocks that have to be removed, right? I think, and we're talking, if we're talking about companies that have employees maybe in one country, like one geography, right? Full-time employees. So you probably maybe look at some better new kind of communication tools. Right, that would be better than Zoom and you know, FaceTime or and Google, you know, or maybe Microsoft Teams, all that. maybe that would finally help to create some real use case for augmented reality. I don't know, but possible, right?
Yeah.
So as a trend, this is gonna stay, but you got to remove some friction, and I think communications, ease of communication, will be one of them. It probably going to be impossible or nearly impossible to replace the real human contact.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think this is a good place for the innovators to come up with some great products, right? To make this friction kind of minimal.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like I said, I think they already are. I think they're already designing them. But as you know, designing and making them GA is a whole different story. I mean, that takes time, and before it's ready for prime time.
Exactly.
Yes. So, but hopefully 2021 or 2022, we'll start to see a lot of these products come. I think in about this summer, I think we'll start to see some of them.
Perhaps. They've
been working on them for 10 months now.
Yeah, perhaps. We'll see. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Oleg, I want to thank you for your time today. Always great to meet a fellow hockey player. You know, maybe we get out there on the ice one of these days with each other.
Maybe one of those days, yes.
Yeah, although we won't be doing it for the Sharks, I can guarantee you that.
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, have a great weekend, and I hope 2021 is a great year for Angel Nears.
Thank you very much, Mark. Same to you. Thank you.
Bye.
My pleasure. Bye.